righty, here we go. Teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar making her way in. The wooden wagon will bring her in. She'll help choose the letter of the day. That's kind of merely the only job she has. Eric, by the way, Sherry, you should know, I used to have a guy on staff named Eric. So every time I would dive into the water, Eric was a guy that would hand me my towel. Tom hated Eric and didn't like the fact that Eric was employed by me and felt that I was somehow dismissive of him because he had a withered hand. And then this became a big thing, and then you weren't even around for that. Were you, Jacob, for when Eric worked for me?
Right, he was before my time.
And Tom didn't like that I had him there, and then I explained I let Eric go, and then the audience got mad that I had let Eric go because he had this withered hand. And then Tom didn't seem to care at all, but I shouldn't speak poorly of either one of them, but that's a part of the... Oh, I was just stalling. Here come the horses now. So teeny tiny there, she will choose the letter of the day. And, look who's in the wagon with her. Look who's in the wagon. Ain't gonna get hotboxed in that wagon.
What's happening, man? You got Marshawn Lynch here, man.
What did you say your name was?
The boy, the kid, Beast Mode, man.
Okay.
What's happening, big dog?
Hello!
Did you understand anything I just said?
Well, the answer is no.
Time to get in there. You just step on her there. Ah, yes. Teeny Tiny in the Wooden Wagon. The Facebook page has a picture of Lady Bits, one of the horses, the brown horse, I think. The one.
No,
Lady
no.
Treasure. Look at the name.
Lady Treasure, what, John.
Lady Treasure.
And Professor Nibbles.
Yeah.
Sherry, are you aware of the horses?
I'm sorry. I can't get past the withered hand.
That's an old horse we had back before these two.
No, okay. No. No, Eric had that. He had the withered hand.
Okay.
Hey, this is kind of nice. We haven't had Felix on.
Felix the cat, the wonderful.
All right, Sherry, let me explain who Felix is. Felix is not a cat. Felix is
this
a guy
ought to be good.
Realized, hey. Felix is a guy who realized there's no one that really that considers themselves to be a local historian. I think I'll do that. I think I'll become a local historian. So filling the void that was there for a reason is Felix.
Yeah, I'm the need no one knew they had.
Oh, well, that's good to meet you, Felix.
Now, this is just the dress rehearsal, right? This isn't going out over the air at this moment, is it? Because if it is, we're going to start it from the top, right? Okay.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Okay. So ready for summer vacation on the what coast, Felix?
The coast of Idaho. The lovely Idaho. It's rugged and wild, and it's full of Pacific beauty. Because...
I didn't know Idaho had a coast.
Well, they don't yet. And they probably never will. But, you know, that's never stopped us before. There's a group down in Oregon that's called Move Oregon's Borders for a Greater Idaho. And it's a group that wants to take all those rural parts of Oregon, which is about pretty much everything except the area around Portland, and add them to the state of Idaho. Because the rural people in Oregon don't really agree with the urban people in Portland. And the people in Idaho, for the most part, are fairly conservative, fairly Republican. They went very strongly for our former president in the last election. And if you had just rural Oregon, they would have gone for the former president in the last election, too. So it's an idea of creating this giant conservative red state, Greater Idaho, that would stretch literally from the Rocky Mountains out to Coos Bay, Oregon. So they'd have a deep water port. And they've actually had advisory ballots in four counties last November. Two of those four counties voted in favor of doing this, only an advisory ballot. And there's a lot that would have to happen. The legislatures of both states, Oregon and Idaho, would have to agree to it. But it's intriguing to me because we often hear of these secession movements where there's, you know, the seat of liberty in eastern Washington. Or this notion of the state of Jefferson down in southern Oregon, northern California. And those are all very messy because secession requires creation of an entirely new state. This is less messy than that because it's just moving counties, most of a bunch of counties, and having them affiliate with another state capital. It's kind of bizarrely simple and brilliant, as crazy as it is.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying it's just crazy enough that they might be able to get away with this?
Yeah. Get me the president. No, it has that kind of a, kookiness to it, and I do think it's a little bit like, what do they call that, Sancho Panza? What's that called when you're tilting at windmills? You know that notion of it. It's kind of crazy, and they're proving some kind of a point, But I, my question to the guy, I talked to the founder, or one of the founders, a guy named Mike McCarter the other day. And I asked him, you know, is it sort of, isn't the point to have a kind of a diverse state? Doesn't it make us stronger? If you have, like in Washington, we have the people of Eastern Washington, people of Western Washington, very different culturally, often very different politically. But when it's all said and done, we're all part of the same evergreen state. And we all kind of grudgingly sort of have this kind of stronger in numbers kind of thing. And this guy said, no, people, the urban people in Oregon don't want to talk to the people in the rural. They just, they see it as sort of their playground. Then they go back home to Portland and it's like they're two very divided parts of the same state. So it's, I mean, it's a divided era, right? People are so divided, more divided now than they've ever been, if you believe a lot of pundits. And so this surge just takes that notion of, you know, gerrymandering when they change the boundaries around of congressional districts every election cycle. This would take gerrymandering to an entirely new, way, way crazier level and make it permanent as a state boundary, which, again, it's sort of brilliant and scary at the same time.
But don't you think that people go ahead, Sherry.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask a question. Being the historian that you are, has this ever happened before?
You know, they've tinkered with the boundaries before, just but more for mechanical reasons. Like there used to be the boundary between Oregon and Washington used to say something about, you know, the center of the main channel of the Columbia or something. But the main channel would move around a little bit. And so back in the late 50s, they said, no, it's going to be the boundary is here at these particular latitudes and longitudes. And the state legislatures of both Oregon and Washington had to agree to that. But this kind of thing where a part of a state joins another part, there might have been something like back in the mid-19th century, around the time of before the Civil War, when, you know, West Virginia and Virginia, North Carolina and South Carolina, that kind of thing. But nothing, anything close to this in modern times. But there have been talks of parts of, you know, conservative parts of Washington, conservative parts of Oregon, succeeding and becoming their own separate entities. What it reminds me more of is, kind of in reverse, is back in the 1850s when you had Oregon Territory, which was all of what's now Washington, Oregon, Idaho, parts of Montana, parts of Wyoming. Huge government territory created in 1848. North of the Columbia in the 1850s.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Jeez,
north of the Columbia. Sit down. And this won't be on the midterm.
Felix,
this
is, Sherry was just trying to be nice.
Credit project.
Felix.
Hey, you had me on. You knew it was coming. Anyway, okay. North of the Columbia River, the settlers thought, hey, those people down in Oregon City are ignoring our needs and they don't really care about us. So they split off and formed Washington Territory. So this is sort of that's sort of that in reverse.
Gotcha.
Next
I'm
question,
really excited
you
this
there
morning.
In the back. Yeah. You there, kind of the irritating libertarian guy there. Didn't you have some kind of a wisecrack to make or something?
Because you have this mamby-pamby idea of like, no, it's best that we all have different points and it just makes us stronger. No, it doesn't. That just makes it easier to dislike somebody. I like the idea of there must have been some reason that everybody first moved to some spot. They all had something in common. They all wanted to go there for whatever it was, right? So everybody's there, and then all of a sudden other people start coming in, bringing in their stuff, whatever they want to do, and it begins to change the fabric of whatever is the original people wanted in that place. So then you have this mishmash, and the culture begins to move in the direction of who's ever stronger or has more power or whatever, more money. I'm just saying, if the people don't feel, you talk to most people that are here in Central Washington or Eastern Washington, they cannot stand the government and liberals on the west side.
Maybe
they
the people you talk to.
Yes, it's, exactly. The people that's why they're here. They are people leaving Seattle. There are people leaving the west side to come to some other place that they feel better represents who they are and the values they have. I mean, they're stuck in Washington.
Yeah,
in the state of Washington. If they could, they would saw it off and push it away.
Yeah, but that's not the right idea. I mean, if you go back even further in the past, right? Didn't Thomas Jefferson think we were going to be a nation full of farmers? And this is all going to be like, that's been the age-old tension in this country between rural and between mechanization and industrialization. But that's what makes us strong. I mean, I travel all over the state all the time, and I love talking to people in rural Washington, even people with completely different political values, because we all share the love of this same geographic area, even though we have different versions of what we think is right or what we think is, you know, politically correct. So I don't know. I just think it seems sort of misguided to become even further divided and to create a state, a giant, greater, mega potato state, Idaho, that's even more red and even more white, too. It'd be less diverse if you combine all of that rural Oregon with all of Idaho. It's not going to be as racially diverse or culturally diverse as Oregon is now or as Idaho is now. It just seems like it's going the wrong direction.
Diversity, you could have, do it by height and weight. Are you okay that way?
I mean it by all stretches of the imagination, all definitions of diversity. It doesn't hurt it. And plus, the country is just getting more diverse by the day. There's no turning back. You can't change that, alter that demographic fact. And to try to make states and try to hang on to some particular demographic order that was big decades ago, it just kind of misses the point of what progress is and what change is.
Sherry?
I'm a governor for all of Washington. Oh, excuse me. Did I say governor?
There he goes. You fell right into it, Sherry. When you ask him an open-ended question and he takes you back to 1854, hold on, everybody.
I was curious. I think it's a fair question, and he answered it.
You don't want a kid on an airplane.
Smart.
You don't want a kid. Yeah, you don't want a kid on an airplane. I don't want a historian on the airplane.
All right. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Get Sean. Get him. Show him the door there. I mean, I love Felix, but man, he can just believe me. Talk about history.
Yeah, well, that's his gig. That's what he loves.
I know. The Black Lives Matter co-founder, well-known and beloved Marxist, defends the fact that she has bought a whole bunch of ritzy homes, and now she's saying, well, it's the people on the right that are attacking. This story broke, and you couldn't read about it on Twitter because they blocked Jason Whitlock, who originally first had it up there. They said, no, you're giving too much personal information about somebody. Somebody will be able to track down this person's house. So then somebody else did some more work. New York Post looked into it. And now the well-known and beloved Marxist, one of the three founders of Black Lives Matter, speaks out about buying the houses and why, and, you know, don't criticize
me. So a critique, though, from the left that would say, if you are a trained Marxist, if we're talking about a certain kind of radical politic, that extravagant homes of any sort or multiple properties of any sort is itself contradictory to the ideology that you hold. And so it's not about having money per se, but that it's about or about property per se, but it's about there being a potential contradiction between your expressed politics and your lived practice.
Sure. And I think that is a critique that is wanting. And I say that because the way that I live my life is in direct support to Black people, including my Black family members, first and foremost. And for so many Black folks who are able to invest in themselves and their community, they choose to invest in their family. And that's what I've chosen to do. I have a child. I have a brother that has severe mental illness that I take care of. I support my mother, and I support many other family members of mine. And so I see my money as not my own. I see it as my family's money as well.
But as a true Marxist, it should not even be, you don't want private possession. So it shouldn't be for your brother, your kid, your mom, or anything. It should be the state. It should be everybody's money.
Right.
If you believe ultimately. So the homes that she has, I think she has three or four, and they're predominantly in white neighborhoods. She spent a lot of money on it. They're looking maybe to buy a place in the Bahamas. I don't begrudge them one bit at all. Go ahead, spend them anywhere you want to make the money. I know some parts of Black Lives Matter now are saying, hey, we want to look into it. This is pretty classic. It starts, you get a movement, you get a cause, a movement, and eventually it devolves down into corruption. So this is what you have. Somebody that has made a lot of money. I don't know what necessarily they've done for Black lives, people that are Black. This person has all of these homes. And it's hard when you're a Marxist to justify it. But most Marxists like to have nice things. They just don't want you to have nice things.
That's true. She says, however, that her money came from being a college professor, a TV producer, a published author, and she got a YouTube deal. BLM is a nonprofit, but she also formed something called BLM Global Network, which is a for-profit organization, and they're not required to disclose how much they make and how much money they spend or how much money they pay.
Got it. Okay. Well, that's convenient. I know that somebody wanted to sue them, and they said you can't sue them because they're a cause. They're a movement. The guy wanted to sue them for slander or libel or something like that. And he said, no, the judge said, no, you really can't because it's not this. It's sort of everything and everywhere. It's amorphic, so you're not going to be able to take them to court. whether they audit and whether people continue to give money to Black Lives Matter. I know a lot of guilty white rich people do. I know a lot of guilty white CEOs of corporations give checks and money to Black Lives Matter in order to be able to say, look at this, protect us. The same way that you'd walk down the street in the city of Seattle or some other place and somebody puts a Black Lives Matter sign in the window. Basically, the window should also say, please don't set this place on fire. Here's a Black Lives Matter sign. Please move on to the next place that doesn't have a Black Lives Matter sign in the window.
I don't think this would have gotten to be such a big story, wouldn't have become such a big story, if she didn't have four houses that were a total of $3.2 million. I mean, if she had one really great house, I think everybody would have been, you know, everybody's entitled to a house, but she has four of them. And one of them is near Malibu. It's a $1.4 million house, which in Malibu, as you probably know, that's not that much. But still, I think the fact that there were so many of them, the extravagance of that is really what made this become such a big story.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I'm a capitalist. Good for you. I hope you get 50 homes. Get 100 homes. I don't care what you want to do. And, you know, just if you're going to walk the walk, walk the talk. And what are you doing in some super duper fancy rich neighborhood? Why aren't you taking your money, not spending it, doing sort of a Mother Teresa sort of move and living among the poor? Go ahead. We live in Detroit or Philadelphia or Baltimore. Go and because those are the lives. Go to Chicago. Live in the south side of Chicago. Live in there, and then you can help raise those people up, not just your family, but, you know, you're a leader. Be where your people are, because that's apparently the most important thing for her. I don't think there'll be any fallout from this. Maybe somebody doesn't give as much money as they used to. Once you find out that the system is corrupt, you don't get money. But look at the fact that Al Sharpton has the UN ambassador, U.S. UN ambassador, speak to Al Sharpton's group the other day. I mean, if that is not the most ridiculous thing, Al Sharpton and what Al Sharpton represents, and we have the U.S. UN ambassador, I forget her name, recently appointed by Biden, talking about how important Al Sharpton's work is and what his organization does and how he brings people together. That's when he's not asking Jews to put back, you know, strap on your yarmulke and bring it here. I mean, what a crazy world we live in.
You're right.
And I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. Tracy Taylor. Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well. Coming in through the State Roofing text line at 989-73. If you sense a little spring in the step of Sherry, it's because she got vaxxed. That's right. Second vax went through, so now I guess you just think you're misvaccinated. can't come up with a name for you.
Feeling very superior.
Yeah. Are you going around coughing on people now?
No, I'm flashing my card, you know, showing everybody my arm.
Yeah.
Just doing the regular, you know, us vaxxers that have that. That's what we do.
Did they give you a Band-Aid, Sherry? People?
Yeah, I have a Band-Aid.
Okay, they didn't give me one.
Oh, they didn't?
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, look how you guys are like now all of a sudden talking about what you got and cutting Sean and I out of it. Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, John.
Oh, I got it. Yeah.
I'm fine. I don't need a Band-Aid.
Yeah. Sherry's standing there. Go ahead, cough in my face. I don't care. Let's have a cough in my face party. Yeah. Which one did they hit you with? Which vaccine did you put into your body so that Bill Gates can monitor your dreams or something like that?
I got the Moderna, and I know that Jacob got the Pfizer. So I've got a little bit of vaccine jealousy because I think the Pfizer is actually a little better. I know.
Really? And lording that over her, Jacob? Are you like, you know, I didn't get a Band-Aid, but I got a better vaccine?
No. In fact, we were both during the pre-show meeting before you were online, John, talking about how really Johnson & Johnson is the coolest one to get. That one's the kind of, you know, the cool guy one that's not even on the market anymore.
You throw a caution to the wind. You're like, yeah, I'll take it. Right. No problem.
You're taking the risk.
Yeah, clot my blood. So the story from the USA Today is, how do you tell somebody or how do you ask somebody if they're vaccinated? I don't even think this is a story. Is this really that big of a deal that you're supposed to ask somebody, or they're supposed to be embarrassed, or it's uncomfortable even to ask the question?
Yeah, and they give a lot of reasons why. Some of it is because if people got the vaccine early, let's say, you know, they may have a pre-existing health condition and they don't want to admit that. If you're wondering, like, wow, well, how'd you get in line? You know, that type of thing. The other thing is people may not want to get a vaccine, and then they're afraid to tell you that because they think you're going to reject them. So it's mm-hmm. one of those kind of touchy things. I don't think it is. Like, I have this hairdresser who talks nonstop. She never, mm-hmm. never stops talking. So she's right behind me when she's putting the highlights in my hair. So I wasn't going to go there and have her be right on top of me like that if she hadn't gotten vaccinated. So I just called the salon and said, has she been vaccinated? And they said no. And I said, okay, I guess I'll be a little more brown than blonde over the next few months.
Wasn't she wearing a mask?
Yeah, but that's not good enough when she's right there. I don't think. I didn't feel comfortable with that. So
I was on a plane a couple of months ago, and there was this old lady. She took her mask off to tell me her life story. And I thought, you know what? Anything coming out of her mouth that hasn't killed her, I can handle that. Right? What's she going to possibly kick my way that my immune system can't?
Wow. My immune system, now who's being overconfident?
Oh, please. Some 82-year-old lady sitting next to me on a plane takes her mask off to tell me about how she found her husband dead and then found her sister having sex with him. That's a good story. And I could barely understand it because it was in the plane and stuff. So she takes her mask off. She tells me a story. And I'm like, you know, go ahead. You know, I didn't ask her to, like, cough in my mouth. But I just kept thinking, my immune system can handle anything coming out of her. But, oh, you're suddenly like, oh, don't do my hair.
Right. Yeah, I had a friend yesterday tell me that she's not getting the vaccine and she wanted to get together, and I was like, I don't know, you know, I'll let you know. So I don't have any problem saying, you know, I'm asking people if they've gotten the vaccine.
But you're doubly vaxxed now, so aren't you like super duper woman now?
Well, yeah, in 2 weeks. Yes.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. So at that point, I can have the same confidence that you have with the 82-year-old woman, but not right now.
Oh, how about you? Yeah, how about you, Jacob? Do you feel like running around with scissors and throwing caution to the wind and jumping in water 20 minutes after eating?
I'm a little bit behind Sherry, so I'm only one dose up. So it's going to be a while for me. Yeah, until I can eat all those potato chips and then get in the kiddie pool.
And I am a little nervous about tomorrow.
Yeah. Why is that?
You know, the side effects.
Ah, yes. As a woman, women tend to have a bigger side effect. So do you think tomorrow you end up kind of these flu-like symptoms and think, oh, what did I do?
I won't regret it, but yes, I'm going to be kind of bummed out. So far, so good. I had it at 12:30 this afternoon. So I've taken, I took a Tylenol when I got home, and I took another one 6 hours later. So I'm hoping that I won't get the fever and the chills.
Yeah, we were kind of morbidly hoping that perhaps you would have some side effects take effect during the show, just because it would make good radio. But obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Sorry, I haven't
serious.
Got anaphylaxis or anything.
Maybe some light clotting would have been fine.
You hope that every Friday, though.
I do. While that was going on, we're going to play this horrible song from Mick Jagger and Dave Cohen. Bill Gates is in my bloodstream. It's my control. The earth is fat and cold. It's never warming up. The earth is turned to slush. The second's coming late. Okay, all right. They're basically saying that those people that are into conspiracy theories, and if you're an anti-vaxxer, then you're a fool and an idiot, and I can't even reason with you because you're so dumb that you think these vaccines are out killing people. That's basically the story of the song, right?
Well, Mick Jagger also said that this song delivers, quote, a much needed optimism while waiting for the lockdown to end. So he's looking at it as not only just an anti-vaxxer kind of slam, but he's also looking at it as an optimistic type of a tune so people will have something to look forward to.
Huh. Let me see if I can... Easy, easy, everything's gonna be real crazy.
It reminds me of like one of those songs that an ad agency or that a health department would come up with, you know, to try to convince people to do something. They'd come up with some catchy kind of song to get people to do whatever they wanted them to do or to come around to a particular idea. If it wasn't Mick Jagger, you know.
Yeah. And I use alcohol wipes. That kind of thing, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Don't forget to use alcohol wipes. All right, Tracy Taylor. All right, here we go. Play. Sean, play your five favorite notes from the Mailman song.
You got it.
I'm the mailman, if you didn't know.
Look at you.
I don't know
all
if that
right,
was five, but I went to the
we
middle.
We call it sometimes tippy top shape.
What?
Yeah, that's tippy top shape. All right, good for you. Teeny tiny lady, she's sitting right over there, and she's got top. She's talking to Tom.
I love my body, and I get a lot of pleasure out of my body.
Oh, that's good. All right, she and Tom are just having a little conversation. We'll get to more of that later, but let's get to all the letters. Wow, that's awkward. Sherry?
Okay, area code 253. Sherry, here's the thing about Jacob. When he's not boasting about this excessive amount of underwear or alluding to doing something, yikes, to robots, or at least one particular robot, which actually makes it weirder, he's one heck of a sweet guy.
I own a lot of underwear.
That is yep, see?
Okay.
Okay. 206. I want to know more about Sherry. She's fun to listen to. But I want to know more about her. Okay, so I promise stop kissing up.
That wasn't a plan. That was I don't know why, but that really came in today.
You don't know
and
why.
And 360 says, someone says, do not disparage Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop.
Right.
Oh, okay, fine. I guess we've lost that listener. Yes.
Right. This is drug possession, area code 425. I'm an addict, but clean now, and John is exactly right. Nobody wants treatment when they're high. Lock him up for 60 days and then put him in treatment.
206, this is some pretty good numbers. It's easy. 75% of homeless people are addicted to drugs in Seattle alone. That is around 6,000 people. It takes 3 to 6 months of inpatient treatment and 2 to 3 years of strict outpatient treatment to recover. Is Washington State really willing to build for that and provide all that?
Eric, the towel boy, says, I thought Eric quit because he and his husband adopted a child. Then John got Eric's husband a job at Trenchless in Seattle.
That is a big part of their life. In fact, it's on their Christmas card every year. 206. Oh, man, I haven't heard about Eric and the Withered Hand Towel Man for quite a while. Well, the good news for you, Mr. 206, is Eric will be back in the beginning of June. So there we go.
Oh, Lynch and Fauci. This is area code 360. Mm-hmm. Marshawn Lynch is giving free Skittles to the first 500 people who get the vaccine.
253. I take all my wife's advice from Marshawn, all my life's advice from Marshawn. So thanks for guys. Thanks for sharing that.
206 says, I wish Marshawn would just say, I'm just here so I don't get fined while answering Fauci's questions.
That'd be good. Birth order. It's 360 says, John, I am the oldest. I will agree with you. The oldest is the smartest child, hands down. Signed, older brother of three dopey siblings. Good.
And area code 360, Sherry, your older sister is right. I was once the only child until my sister screwed that up. Now I'm in my 40s. I still remind her that she did that to me.
Good. Keep that over her head. 253 says, I hope Sherry is grateful that her sister's favorite show wasn't Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
I am. Toddler masks, area code 215. I would spend $100 to know that there were no kids on that plane.
Brad the painter says, now that I know Sherry hates babies, it's easy to picture her. Got a kind of Cruella de Vil vibe going on. Maybe with a little Wicked Witch of the West mix in. Wow, he's got you figured out.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Got you nailed, yeah.
Right. This comes from Eric the Towel Boy. Hey, John, I thought you said you were going to bring me back to the show. Well, forget it. I got hired by United Airlines to fly their planes. You can take that Towel Boy job and shove it.
Wait a minute, Eric. That can't be from Eric, because he can't type. He's got the withered hand. Sean, Jacob, do you think that's from Eric the Towboy?
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
I guess didn't ride no more.
Didn't ride
all right. All right, Sherry.
Bloom a hanging around my front
door. We're going to do another hour of this. Here we go. All right.